This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center. This is our first official show for 2013, and my guest today is Michael Keating. Michael is a senior editor for Penton Media. He is the main editor or senior editor for Government Product News for American City and County, and you edit also the GovPro.com website, right?
Indeed I do, Mark.
Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Glad to be here.
Let's start off with exactly what all of that means. Tell us about GPN, GovPro, American City and County, and then I've got a couple other questions before we get into your top 10 articles of 2012.
Mark. Government Product News and American City and County are part of Penton Media's public infrastructure group, Government Product News goes to about 60,000, mainly local and state administrators, and as well as some federal agency administrators, managers. American City and County mainly goes to officials in local government, including cities and counties throughout the U.S. As far as Government Product News, when you include pass-along readership, we reach 300,000 government readers each month. It's a monthly magazine. In the Public Infrastructure Group, it reaches 500,000 government leaders around the country. The Public Infrastructure Group includes fire chief, government procurement, urgent communications, American School and University, as well as Government Product News and Government Procurement Magazine. The latter goes to about 25,000 public sector purchasing officials. As far as GovPro.com, it's a website that includes a digital edition of Government Product News, as well as a lot of news items and a product and service directory for governments. Likewise, American City and County has a website, AmericanCityandCounty.com, which has a wealth of information for local government administrators. So it's a full package. We also have webinars and e-newsletters and a variety of other services for our audiences.
And you, when you talk about the government audience, that doesn't even bring into play all of the contractors and manufacturers that read these publications to stay current on the issues impacting cities, counties, and the government procurement community at large.
Indeed, we do have a sizable audience of contractors and vendors. We also have what's called the Use It or Lose It e-newsletter series. Comes out about five times a year before the end of the federal fiscal year, and it has pointers and news on landing some additional federal contracts for the contracting community.
Cool. Now, you do two things that I like a lot also. Number one, the Keating Report. Tell people what the Keating Report covers, please.
Sure, Mark. The Keating Report is a forecast on government budgets and spending at all levels of government, federal, state, local, special, district. And we do that twice a year, in the January issue of Government Product News and also the June issue of Government Product News. It's also on our GovPro.com site, and it includes statistics and data from forecasters like IHS Global, macroeconomics, other organizations. It also has views from experts at government agencies, and we've talked to mayors, city managers, cabinet officials over the years, and we've been doing the Keating Report about 25 years now in government product news. We also have comments from folks at the Council of State Governments, Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, Heritage Foundation, lots of groups, National League of Cities. So it's a well-rounded outlook report on what's going to be going on in the government market for the next 6 months. And it's broken out into about six sections covering each level of government, as well as some of the important trends going on. And I might mention, I welcome your listeners' comments or forecasts on what they see happening in 2013. Just go to our govpro.com site, and there's a contact us area, and feel free to send me your views. So we'll be glad to hopefully incorporate them in one of our upcoming forecasts.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to be in a couple of your reports over the years. One of those, though, doesn't have to do with Penton. Industry market trends is for manufacturers.
Indeed, I do a slightly revised version of the forecast for industry market trends. It's a Thomasnet's e-newsletter. Industry market trends goes to about 375,000 manufacturing executives, and I incorporate the views from contractors, vendors, on how they see the government market shaping up as far as landing more government business, and I do that on a every 6 months in industry market trends, and again, it's from Thomasnet.
Cool. All right, let's get into the meat, if you will, of our discussion today. You have a top 10 list for the stories that were most popular, hit most on your websites this past year. And the most trafficked topic was telework.
It certainly is a hot topic, Mark. Our rankings of the top 10 stories was based on page views among our GovPro.com audience. And telework, those stories, some of them were picked up by other websites such as FedSmith, a couple of government finance websites, and so that may explain their high ranking in our list of 2012 stories. Telework appears to be a hot topic. We've written about telework policies at federal agencies, GSA, Department of Labor. We've also covered telework, an expansion of telework in state governments such as Washington State and Minnesota. And we talked to some of the trade groups out there, such as Telework Exchange, which does some surveys in the area. So government workers appear to be very much interested in telework policies.
Well, it's odd because back in the early 90s, GSA had a group called the Cooperative Admin Support Unit program, and they were responsible for coordinating where there was a geographic cluster of federal agencies, the you know, kind of the support structure. So if there were 20 agencies in a building, they'd get together and share mail facilities and print facilities. Sometimes they'd share training. You provide training for all 20 agencies, that kind of thing. But one of the programs they were involved in early on was telework, and they set up about a half a dozen telework sort of commuting centers around D.C. in a hub-type fashion. So it wasn't like working from home, but you drive into the telework center, which was, again, you know, there's probably three or four in Virginia or three or four in Maryland, maybe three each. So you wouldn't have to drive all the way in, and it was a shared agency facility managed by GSA. And it's been kind of a hot and cold topic for years. So how do you see that playing out at the state and local level? Are they adopting?
There are some hotbeds of telework activity. The Washington State Transportation Department is a major innovator in the area and seems to be encouraging more of its workforce to a telework. But you're right, Mark. American City and County did a survey of its readers on the subject of telework, and it's just 25% of the respondents said their city or county expects to allow more employees to telework. 75% said no, telework's going to, policies are going to stay the same. And maybe at local government levels, there's more challenges for teleworking, say in a courthouse or city hall. You probably actually need to have somebody on the premises to handle in-person traffic. So there's kind of a mixed response as far as the growth of telework in local governments. Talked to an official at the Telework Exchange organization, and that group has sponsored research by organizations like Cisco on the subject of telework, and they have an annual telework week. And in governments, there's growing participation in the telework programs, according to the Telework Exchange organization.
Yeah, let's wrap up telework at the beginning of the next segment. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Michael Keating. Michael is a senior editor for Penton Media. He is the editor of Government Product News, American City and County, and he edits the GovPro.com website. All of these are extremely informationally robust publications and websites. I suggest you take a look, especially if you want to do more work at the state and local level. GPN, Government Product News, does cover federal as well as state and local. But let's get back to wrap up the telework. It was actually two of the top 10 stories for you, and it was actually number one and number three. So it is a hot issue. One of the things that jumped out at me, though, was, you know, there's kind of a variety of terms that cover this: telework, telecommuting, flexible workplace, remote work, virtual work, and mobile work. But that last one especially, Michael, brings in is the growth of this area tied to all of the mobile devices available now?
Indeed it is, Mark. And we talked to Cindy Auten at Telework Exchange, and she sees the bring-your-own-device concept leading to an expanded telework workforce in governments. And we hope to do a survey on that whole subject of BYOD, bring-your-own-device, versus government-furnished telecommunications gear, hopefully sometime in the future.
Okay. Anything else on telework before we migrate to the next topic?
No, I think we've covered that pretty pretty well, Mark.
Done that one in. Okay. The number two story also has sort of two parts in the top ten, tapping in at 2 and 5. Which states or what states spend the least per capita on government? So this again is one of your stories. So you highlight five states here. I'm curious to see where Maryland flops in, by the way. I have to imagine we're one of the higher ones, but
I believe you. Maryland does score fairly high in the per capita spending in government. Or Nevada came in first. It spends the least per capita on government operations. The other top five states with low per capita spends were Texas, Georgia, Florida, and I was kind of surprised Illinois.
I was surprised that one too.
And I might mention we've done this ranking a couple of times. Hoped to pull one together again in 2013. It's the ranking is based on government per capita spending from about a half dozen sources, including the Council of State Governments, Kaiser Family Foundations, State Health Facts website, a couple of other organizations that compile data on per capita spending in government. And we've again done this ranking a couple of times, and we try to get comments from economic development directors and lots of other officials on how the rankings stack up.
Well, the thing that struck me was Nevada being extraordinarily proud because Nevada and Texas say this helps spur their job growth. I would have thought that, and Nevada was talking about also how it's easy for companies to incorporate. So I was kind of surprised not to see Delaware in there as well, according to that. But a lot of companies that incorporate in Delaware don't actually inhabit Delaware. So.
Indeed, and I think Delaware might be in the midsection as far as per capita spending on government, I'm going to double-check on that, but I think there wasn't a whole lot of change comparing our last two rankings among the states. So these top five, four, Texas, Georgia, Nevada, Florida, seem to finish strongly each time we've done the ranking.
Okay. The one of the things that really jumped out at me there was none of those states seemed to rank really high when it comes to public education. So, and that was one of the reasons I was curious about Maryland. Maryland gets companies to come here oftentimes, just like Northern Virginia does, because of the quality of education that's offered, public schools in particular. So is there an impact here? If you are spending less per capita, does that necessarily mean you're going to be spending less for education?
Maybe it's a question of priorities. And I'm going to go back and see where Maryland, Virginia, if they've been moving up in the rankings. Maybe those states you mentioned, Mark, they take money from other government functions and spend more on education. I've got a call into a couple of technology education organizations that tie into science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM groups such as the STEM Education Coalition, to see if they've done any rankings by state, so we can see is there a connection between per capita spending and the quality of public education, including STEM programs. And how is it affecting workforce growth are those states that spend more on technology education, seeing more companies relocate to their states, or is it more of a question about taxes? You talked to the Tax Foundation, which was one of our sources, and taxes are a key factor, not the main factor, but an important factor in determining where a company is going to expand or relocate.
Yeah, I think I saw in here also that most of the states that spend the lower per capita inhabit the Midwest. Is that accurate?
Let's see. Yes, almost half of the 20 states with the lowest per capita spend are in the Midwest, and six are in the southern U.S. I think I assume the southern states would dominate low per capita spend, but kind of surprising about the Midwest.
Can we assume this is a red-blue issue?
I think that's a factor, and maybe we should see if the lowest per capita spend states, what their voting registrations percentage breakout might be.
You can just look at the last political election map, too, with the exception maybe of Florida, but that was that was pretty darn close anyway. Although a lot of states were pretty darn close in the last election.
I might mention, Mark, I'd like to do a similar ranking of local governments as far as per capita spend in governments, and maybe just the top 50 local governments to see where they stack up.
Cool. That would be that'd be neat. Now, when you say local governments, that would include like the largest counties and the largest cities. Then,
yeah, I'm trying seeing where the data might be available. Would we even have to use MSAs, metropolitan statistical areas, or could we? I think the county data is available, but I think people might prefer. Cities that's right in hits their pocketbook.
I'd be curious too. So if you do that, definitely let me know. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will continue this discussion on the other side of these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Michael Keating. You can Michael is a senior editor at Penton Media. You can find him. Go to the govpro.com site or americancityandcounty.com. Michael can be found on the contact us at both. And if you didn't hear earlier, if you have opinions on how the government is spending or trends in government spending, drop him a line. He's always looking for good sources for that. Michael, the next story I would like to talk about involves something that's been hot in D.C. on and off for months, ever since the USA Today story broke, and that is the government pay structure. So you guys did a story on this when?
It's been a couple of months ago, Mark, and our accurately measuring pay in the public sector story scored number four in our top 10 stories of 2012 on the GovPro.com website. We talked to a vice president at the Hay Group. It's a benefit consulting organization about private versus public sector pay, and how do you measure pay in the public sector versus the private sector. It's all over the block as far as our federal workers paid more than workers in the private sector, especially when you factor in the benefits. Jack Moore on the Federal News Radio back in October had a write-up where he cited data from the Federal Salary Council that showed the gap growing between pay that federal employees earn versus private sector workers. the Federal Salary Council said on average federal employees earn 34% less than their private sector counterparts, and yet you see data from the Heritage Foundation, other groups claiming workers in government are paid much more when you factor in benefits than workers in the private sector. In our analysis, we cited a number of sources, including the Employment Policy Research Network and a couple of consulting groups, including the Hay Group, in our discussion of pay in the private sector versus public sector. And yes, it scored high on our list of top stories for 2012. Because there's a lot of interest in this subject, the consultants we spoke to said you have to be careful when you compare pay in the private versus public sector. You have to compare similar jobs and factor in benefits, and there's lots of years of experience, lots of other factors that need to be analyzed.
Well, not only that, but I mean, you know, it's apples and oranges kind of thing. The private sector and public sector jobs are really often quite different. So the direct comparison, we're not going to come to a conclusion here, even though a lot of the sources you cited have come to conclusions, but it remains an extremely hot topic here in D.C., you know, because there's been freezes on federal pay, et cetera. But that leads to the number six story, and that's the bump in pay, not necessarily at the federal level, but state and local level for procurement professionals. So,
yes, that is an interesting story. Our readers ranked that one of the higher interest stories in 2012, and we got data from the National Institute of Governmental Purchasing, which does salary surveys, and according to NIGP, the director of purchasing salaries rose 40% in the period from 2001 to 2010. And NIGP got data from both public procurement agencies and individual procurement professionals for its 2012 survey reports. Maybe it's an indication that public purchasing officials are getting more respect, and their value is increasing in governments around the country.
Well, Lord knows when something goes wrong, they catch a lot of grief.
Indeed, and maybe when you, I was just looking at some of this survey data. Say a buyer in the central region of a city with a procurement volume between 1 and 10 million, that person might expect a salary of about $45,000-$46,000, which seems, I suppose, somewhat reasonable, but a procurement official certainly has a lot of responsibility and for that kind of salary.
Yeah, and in the D.C. area, frankly, that's not an extraordinary salary. And for a lot of, I think, major metropolitan areas, it's not. So we're talking about a lot of cities and counties here that where cost of living is probably somewhat more reasonable.
Pegged the median salary at somewhere between $59,000 and $64,000, and that includes administrative assistants as well as administrative directors in local governments' purchasing offices.
Okay. I want to move on to the next story because I want to get into this second. This is a fun one. I remember when this broke, and the video was a hoot. Aeron chairs manufactured by Herman Miller. There was a minor spike in government. I consider it a minor spike in government buying of these chairs. possibly due to the video on YouTube where they're playing like hockey in these chairs. So give me the background here.
Indeed, Mark, we had seen a write-up in the Daily about that reported that federal government agencies bought more than 1,000 ergonomic chairs from 2005 to 2011, and all but about 200 of the ergonomic chairs were Aeron chairs from Herman Miller, and federal agencies spent at least $500,000 on Aeron models, which is a good chunk of change, but when you consider Aeron sell for up to $1,100 each, it's not a whole lot. And when you figure the workforce, government workforce numbers in the millions, that's a really small number of chairs. But it did generate a lot of feedback on our govpro.com websites. Pros and cons, people saying, yes, the chairs are a little pricey, but they are very comfortable, and that a lot
ergonomic.
Of government, yes, ergonomic chairs, but and that a lot of government workers boosted productivity thanks to Aeron chairs.
Well, not only that, number one, they're made in America. Number two, they are pricey, but they last a lot longer than a lot of the other chairs. Frankly, you know, if you just walk into an office supply store, we won't use any names here, but, you know, they've got a range of chairs, and the lower amount that you pay for a chair, the less likely it's going to last more than a year or two. And the Aeron chairs seem to have a lifetime of closer to 10 years. So, you know, you kind of get what you pay for.
And it might be a wise purchase on the part of government, because I'm sure Herman Miller has surveys showing increased productivity thanks to these ergonomic chairs.
Well, the ergonomic workplace, there's been a number of studies. I've worked with a number of furniture companies over the years, but there's been a number of studies on productivity increases, people staying at work longer, if the ergonomic environment is proper.
So, well, we hope to see if there's similar data available at state and local government agencies. The agency with the most Aeron chairs, according to this report, was the State Department with almost 500 chairs. So I'm sure it's a subject we'll hear more about in the future.
Yeah, if you want to see the video, it's Aeron, or just look up Herman Miller, both on YouTube. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and we'll discuss the last three stories when we return. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Michael Keating. Michael's the senior editor of Penton Media. He edits Government Product News, American City and County, and he is the website editor for GovPro.com. Michael, we're going to bump 8 and 10 together, so we're going to talk about number 9 next, which is, oddly enough, the Keating Report. Our budget's out of the woods. This was the June report or the January?
I believe this was the January report, Mark. We do Keating Report forecast on government budgets and spending in each January and June issue of Government Product News, and the reports are online at govpro.com. We are now working on our 2013 forecast that will be in the January issue of Government Product News, and gathering the statistics on government budgets and spending, and also cover things like new government construction, trends in public-private partnerships, a couple of other areas. Small peak. We are seeing that in 2013, government purchases of goods and services will reach about $3.08 trillion, which is up from $3.07 trillion in 2012. So the government market remains robust at all levels, federal, state, local. And we're seeing, looking at data from a lot of different sources, including IHS Global, the Congressional Budget Office, Council of State Governments, National League of Cities, and it, government... Yes, and governments are searching for more revenue and trying any way they can to get more efficient. And like I said, would welcome your listeners' views on how they see 2013 government budget spending, where they see it headed.
Well, sort of an off-the-wall question that just occurred to me. Two of the quote, revenue enhancement devices that a lot of governments, especially state and local, seem to be going after are the speeding cameras and the partnerships, as it were, with gaming organizations, casinos. Are these becoming more widespread? I mean, we just went through a volatile campaign issue here in Maryland, and the gambling was approved. You know, the part of the argument for was so much of this that the taxes are going to go straight to education. Well, frankly, I've heard that before, and it hadn't occurred. But... Same thing with the cameras, not just the red light, but the speeding cameras.
Indeed, Mark, and you look at us in Ohio, voters approved setting up four casinos in the state, and one of the arguments was, well, Ohio residents are driving to Indiana, Pennsylvania, Michigan to do their gambling. Let's keep them here in Ohio. And that was one of the selling points for proponents of casino gambling in Ohio. As far as red light cameras, I saw the Post had a write-up, maybe it was the Examiner, somebody had a big write-up on how, I think it's Prince George County is... in Maryland is going to be adding more red light and speed cameras as a safety response. Some see it as a revenue response, but I think Arizona has gone in the other direction, reduced the number of traffic control cameras. It's might be a little mixed around the country what direction governments are headed in this in that area.
Yeah, be curious to see though if any of the money that they say is going to go towards education actually does
for the gambling revenues.
Yeah,
in Ohio and I think several other states, lottery. Revenues are earmarked for education. Maybe some of it's going to the general fund.
I want to see some smart kids in a few years. That's all I have to say. My son among them. My daughter's already really bright, and she's in college, so I don't know if it's going to impact her or not. All right, the final two stories we're going to bundle together. Oh, and by the way, the next Keating report, if you haven't caught on, is coming out in January. So if you go to the GovPro website at the end of January, you'll be able to download the new report, right, Michael?
Indeed. Working away on it now, trying to figure out how to figure out what's going to happen with the fiscal cliff and lots of other budget issues going forward.
Yeah, I'll put in a plug here. I've spoken at a couple of events over the years that where I had not a tremendous amount of expertise, the National Truck Equipment Show and the Modular Building Institute. When I found out I was going to be speaking at these venues, I'd call Michael and say, you know, do you have any data on this? And, you know, within 48 hours, I'd have all of the data I needed to construct a very robust presentation, information-filled presentation for those people. So, Michael, thank you for that.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to help. And I might mention our January issue has a complete events calendar. Any sort of trade show tied in to the government market is going to be listed in our January government product news, including the NTEA, Truck Equipment Association show, and numerous government-related events.
I enjoyed speaking at both those events. The Modular Building Institute was, total education for me. I had no clue as to how much building actually occurs in a modular format. So thank you again for that. But the final two stories are related again. GSA number 8 is putting a halt to improper spending with a related video, and then heads roll at GSA number 10 over lavish spending. And these both had to do with various training and conference type functions. So this was, again, huge news here in D.C., Michael.
Indeed it was, Mark, and we talked to experts at law firms, auditing firms, when the GSA situation hit, dealing with extravagant spending at GSA conferences, and we talked to auditors, attorneys, how can we get a grip on government spending at conferences and events. And there's a lot of interest among our GovPro.com visitors, people concerned about improper government spending. And one of our write-ups focused on GSA's spending, and the other got more of a look at how other levels of government can rein in inappropriate spending. I might mention GSA canceled or postponed some conferences as a result of the hullabaloo over inappropriate government spending.
Yeah, initially the number approached 40 events that were canceled, including one on green buildings that was there was like tons of exhibitors going there, people had arranged their travel, et cetera, and the plug was pulled, and I assume that was the case on all of them. But it's really become very difficult for feds to justify going to any of these types of events, too. I've spoken with several federal officials about this, and they say, the paperwork for justifying the travel to any outside of your immediate area event has become onerous.
We just hope GSA will continue to have its GSA training expo as well as Fed Fleet. I think those are scheduled for 2013. Gov Energy, I got my fingers crossed that Gov Energy, that program will be started again in 2013.
Well, the Fed, I hear from reliable sources, GSA Expo is on for Orlando in I believe May. I haven't heard either way on Fed Fleet. I agree, it is an extremely valuable event for both the federal fleet community and the industry. You have to factor in the industry, because industry needs venues where they can actually meet with federal officials and face to face discuss the needs.
Absolutely, Mark.
So, Michael, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Greatly, greatly appreciate this. And we will post the link on our archives here directly to the top 10 stories. So if you want to read them all yourself, or if you have a couple you want to read, the link will be there. So, Michael, again, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Mark.
Always a pleasure. This is not my day job. If your company needs to maximize your marketing program or your use of LinkedIn, give me a call. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net and our program at Capital College, the Government Market Master program at Capital College, rolls out a full venue of seminars starting in February. And we have a bunch of full-day summits scheduled for the week of March 11th. Stay tuned for details, and thank you for listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.